And we're holding on Chofches Amud Beis, the second Mishnah. Mishnah says, suppose you find the lost animal. Now you have to consider, you know, on the one hand, you have a lost animal, it's going to cost you in order to keep it because you're going to have to feed it and do different other things for it. Eventually, you're going to be entitled to recoup that cost from the owner. And it would be, as Rashi points out, if let's say, for example, it wouldn't be really worthwhile if you found an animal worth $100, let's say, and by the time the guy shows up to collect it, you've given it more than half its value in food, and then you're going to be billing him for that, then it's not really worthwhile to him. So therefore, so the Mishnah describes what you should do as far as that. So the Mishnah says, kol davar sha'oseh v'oichol, any kind of animal that does work and then it eats. So for example, you found an ox or a donkey, so their time, their labor is worth something, so you can have them working for you, and then that'll offset the cost of feeding them, most of the cost anyway. You can rent them out to somebody else, same idea. So you do that, you should have them do work for yourself or for renting out to others and eat. In other words, in that way you're offsetting the cost of the food and everything that you're giving it with the work that you're getting out of the animal. And that way, when the guy comes, that way, when the owner comes to collect his animal, you won't have to, it won't be that you're going to be charging him a huge amount, which is not going to be worth it to him. When you have a type of animal that does not work for, that does not work for its keep, so then you mocher. So then what you should do is you should sell it instead of keeping on. Now, the point is, Rashi says, whenever possible, you do want to return the person the original animal, because a person would rather have the animal that he's used to, that he trained already, and everything. On the other hand, we're saying that you don't want to have where it gets to the point where you're going to end up charging him so much that it's not worth it relative to the cost of the animal. So now, when you have an animal that requires food and another upkeep, and it doesn't do work, it doesn't do work to offset that, then what you should do is you should sell it and hold on to the money, and that way when the owner comes, okay, he won't have his animal, which he would have preferred to have, but on the other hand, he'll get back the full value of it at least, and he'll be able to go buy another animal of the same kind. Now, obviously, you don't have to do that. You want to act l'fnim b'shura sadin and support the animal out of your own pocket, gezon dehet. You have the story of Rav Chanina ben Dosa in Tainis, who did just that, where there was a person, poor person, left chickens by his doorstep, and Rav Chanina and his wife are taking care of them until they make a nuisance of themselves, and then he sells the chickens and buys goats. Now, goats are not a work animal, and he's sending them out to graze, but there's some upkeep that has to be done for them, and eventually, years later, the guy comes and Rav Chanina gives him the goats. Now, Me'ikra Adin, Rav Chanina would have been entitled after a certain amount of time to just sell the chickens and keep the money in safekeeping for the guy until he comes. But in this case, he was acting with Nimashur Sadin. But he was talking about in the mission of the basic halach. So Shanema, because the Pasuk says, Bahashe voiso lo, the Pasuk says you should return the lost object to him, which means look into what the proper way is to return him. Meaning, in other words, that again, if you have that you're going to end up charging him so much. Rashi uses the expression more than half of the value of it, implying that up to half would be fine. But you're going to be charging him more than half the value of the animal for the food and the other upkeep, then it's not going to be worth it to him. You haven't really returned it to him properly. So whenever you have that the amount you'd be charging him for the food and everything is going to be half or more than half the value of the animal, then at that point you should sell it and keep the money, unless you're planning to do l'fnei mishuras hadin like Rav Chanina ben Dosa and continue to keep it for him indefinitely. Okay, so the Mishnah continues. Ma yehei b'damim, what happens with the money? Are you allowed to use that money? Meanwhile, Reb Tarfon omer yishtamash behen. Reb Tarfon says you are allowed to use that money. L'fichach im avdu chay b'achriyosan. Therefore, because of that, it means, in other words, that in effect, you're like a shema socher, or even like a borrower, like a loiva, and therefore, if the money is lost, then you're still chayav b'achrius, and you're still gonna have to reimburse the money because you had the ability to use it. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva says you can't use them lefichach, and therefore you're only like a shema socha on them. You're only like a shema chinam on them. Avdu ein chay b'achru your son. Therefore, if they're lost, then you're not chay b'achru your son, because of course, as we know, shema chinam is potter for almost everything except for unless he's presheya or unless he's sheleach yad, which we're going to talk about in the next parak. Those din. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. So when you're saying in the first part of the Mishnah, you're saying that if the animal works for its keep, then you should have it work, and then you're, and then that'll offset the cost of taking care of it. The question is, is that still forever? If it does eventually, it's still the cost of taking care of the animal is still going to exceed the amount that you can get, the amount of work that you can get out of it. And you also have, more to the point anyway, you have the tircha of watching it. You didn't sign up for this, that you're going to be watching an animal. How can we put it on indefinitely, like the Mishnah seems to be implying? And the answer is, you're right, you don't have to take care of it indefinitely, just until 12 months. After that, even if the animal is a work animal, you can still, at that point, you can sell the animal and then put the money aside and wait for the owner to come back. Usually, b'chlal, after 12 months, there's a likelihood that the owner has been miyayish anyway. But nevertheless, if you are going to keep it beyond 12 months, at that point, you're allowed to sell it. There was actually a machlokas you're showing him whether we mean 12 months from when you first found it or from when you rented it out. Or started working with it or whatever. Anyway, Tani Nami Hachi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Kol Davar Sha'osa V'Oichol, any type of animal that does work and eats, Kagan part of a chamur, for example, a cow or a donkey, Metapa Behenad Shnei Masa Chodesh, you take care of them for 12 months, Mikan Ve'elach, after that, Shom Dmehen, you evaluate how much they're worth, Oman Nichan, and you set aside the money. So we're shunned mehen now. That means, in other words, it means that you sell them and set the money aside. Whether you have to sell in Beis Din under the supervision of Beis Din, or whether you can sell it by yourself. Tosfos over here refers to something that they write in a couple of more blocks on Lamed Beis and on Aleph, where they discuss that point. And also, there's a discussion among Rishonim. Are you allowed to evaluate it and keep it for yourself? Are you allowed to figure out for yourself? Listen, this animal is worth $100. So fine, I'm going to set aside $100 for the owner, and now I can start using this animal. Now it's like instead of having to go and buy an animal for this purpose, I may as well keep this one and in effect buy it from the owner. Is he allowed to do that, or does he have to sell it to somebody else? That's also a discussion among Rishonim. Anyway, shummed mehen would mean he evaluates how much they're worth, uman nichan, and he sets the money aside. Manichan can mean to set the money aside. It may also mean that he's allowed to keep the animal for himself once he's paid the amount and set it aside for the owner. Next, the Braisa continues. Agolim usyachin, if you find young calves or young horses where they're too young to do work yet, metapven shloisha chadashim, those you have to take care of for 3 months, mekan ve'elach, and after that shomd mein manichan, then again you evaluate how much they're worth and you sell them and set aside the money, or again maybe you sell them to yourself, as the case may be. Continues the Braisa, avzin v'town golin, as far as geese and chickens. And we're talking about and tarnagolim are roosters, so you don't even get eggs out of them. So then, top of them shloshim yom, then you only have to take care of them 30 days. Mikan ve'elach sham d'mein manichan, and after that you can sell. So we see that yes, even with animals that work, such as cows and donkeys, you do in fact have a maximum amount of time that you're expected to keep them and take care of them. So now we mentioned roosters. What about hens? For this purpose, a hen, which after all lays eggs, and you have the eggs as the work that it does. So that kibahema gasa, that has the din like a large animal where you have to keep it up to 12 months. It says tani nami hochi. In fact, we learn like that at a brisa. Tarnagolas or behema gasa, a rooster or a large animal like a cow or like a cow, mitakban shneimos a chodesh, you take care of it for 12 months, mikan ve'elach, after that, shom d'meinu manichan, you sell them and you set aside the money. A golem musiach and mitakban shloshim yoim, calves and ponies, you take care of for 30 days, and then you set aside the money, then you sell them and set aside the money. Now, the Gemara is going to ask in a second that, wait, didn't we just say in the previous price of 3 months? So we'll get back to that. Abzim, the town of Golan, and as far as ducks and chi as far as geese and chickens, or as far as geese and roosters, anything else where they're taking care of it is more, is worth more than the amount of than the amount of benefit you'd get from it, the amount of work or the amount of eggs or whatever. Then you only have to take care of them 3 days. So the Gemara points out, Kasha Abzim, the town. Now you have a contradiction in the brises between as far as calves and ponies. The first brise had said 3 months. The second brise said 30 days. Also, avzin v'tanu golan, a avzin v'tanu golan. And you have a contradiction between the two brises as far as geese and roosters. The first brise said 30 days. The second one said 3 days. So what is it? And the answer is agolam usiyachin. There's no contradiction as far as the calves and the ponies. It depends whether the animals are the kind where you can send them out, or you're in the, or you live in an area where you can send them out in the meadow to graze, versus vahodipatuma, versus you have ones where you have to keep them at home and feed them yourself. So Rashi describes, let's say, the time of year when there's no, that's a time of year, for example, when there's no grass out growing outside to feed them, or maybe it could be you're living in an area where there's no grass or whatever. So therefore you have to keep it in your house and feed it. So that you only need to keep them for a much shorter amount of time, because then, of course, you're going through a lot more tircha. As opposed to if you can send them out to graze, then you should hold on to them for 3 months. True, they're not doing work, but on the other hand, you're not really putting very much expense into keeping them either, because for the most part, they're eating on their own. Similarly, avzin v'tanu of golan, avzin v'tanu of golan, nami like kasha, there's no contradiction as far as the geese and the roosters, because one's talking about large ones, the other one's small ones. Rashi explains the distinction is large geese or large roosters eat a lot. So therefore, so it's enough to keep them for 3 days, and after that, the cost of taking care of them is high enough that you're not obligated to do it anymore. You can sell them, as opposed to small ones don't eat that much. Therefore, that was the first braisa had said that you should hold on to them for 30 days. Most of Tagoris HaGura points out that the Rambam, and actually most of the Rambam and the Nemukah Yosef, and actually many other Rishonim as well, flip it around and say, on the contrary, the large ones are the large ones are the ones that you should keep for 30 days, because since they're large, they can forage for food for themselves for the most part. Chickens, for example, we find all over Shas will peck in the garbage. So when they're large, they can do that themselves, and therefore, again, you don't have that much expense taking care of them. Small ones, which are too small to do that, and you have to feed them, then those you keep for a maximum of 3 days. So that's that. So when you have so again, so even with work animals, there is a maximum amount of time you keep them, and with non-work animals, there are shorter amounts of time. And the Mishnah had said that if it doesn't do work, if you don't get any benefit out of it, then you sell it. So Tanu Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, it's based on the idea that the pasuk says v'ashivoyso lo, you should return it to him, which means re'ei heyach tishivenu lo, which means see to it how you're going to return it, that you're going to do a proper return. You shouldn't, for example, you found a bunch of calves and you're going to take the you're going to have to feed them so much that the value of one of them is equal, that the value of the food that you gave them is equal to the value of one of them, because that wouldn't be a hashava. Then when you're giving back, you're going to be charging him so much for the amount of food that it's not worth it to him. Similarly, siyoch, don't do the same thing with ponies, to take the amount that you would, that it would take to feed the amount that it would take to feed all of them is going to end up equaling the cost of one of the animals. Abs a abs in town of Gola, town the town of Gola, town of Golan, and the same thing as far as geese and as far as roosters. So in all cases, then the Chachamim evaluated how long it's going to take before that comes out, that the amount that you fed them is so much relative to the value of the animals that it's not worth it to the owner, and then at that point you should sell it. Since we're saying over here, Egel Agolim, and the other ones, that implies, for example, you found two calves, then you shouldn't they shouldn't be giving the value of one calf to feed to the other. This is where Mephoshim point out, this is where Rashi got the point that he said that if it's half or more, then you have a problem. If it's less than half, then it's not a problem, and go ahead and do that. And when the owner comes, fine, you're going to be charging him for the food, but it's less than half the value of the animal, and therefore it's still considered a proper hashava. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Mayehei Bedomim, what are you supposed to do with the money when you sell the animal? Reb Tarfon Ami Yishtamash V'chola, we said we have the Machlokas, Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva, whether you can use the money or not, and therefore whether you chayev b'achri yosef. So the Gemara says, Ad kan loy pligi ella v'nish elach shenishtamish behen. Now the machloka seems to be only when he's able to use the money. Now Tosfos and many other Rishonim point out that we don't necessarily mean whether he actually used the money or not. In fact, the Gemara is going to point out, according to Rabbi Akiva, he's not supposed to be using the money. If he does, according to Rabbi Akiva, who said in the Mishnah that he's not supposed to be using the money, and therefore he's not chay b'achri yosef, if he actually used the money, that would be even worse. Now he'd be shaleach yad b'pikadon. It would be that he, in other words, Rabbi Akiva, as we're going to develop in this sugya over here, considers the money like a pikadon. Well, obviously, if you take a pikadon and use it without permission, then that's shlichus yad, which we're going to learn about in the next perek. Then you chayev for everything, including oinsin. So obviously we don't mean in the Gemara over here, Nishtamish Behen, and Loin Nishtamish Behen means he actually used it or not, but just means whether he has permission to use the money or not. The point of Reb Tarfon, he has permission, and the fact that he does already makes him a Shema Sacher or a Shoyal, whereas according to Reb Akiva, not. So Ava Loin Nishtamish Behen, it sounds like whenever a person does not have when the person does not have the ability to use the money, im avdu potter, and that it sounds like both Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva would agree that he's potter from that he's potter if any onus or gneva v'aveda or anything happened to the money, because he'd be a shomachin. The problem with that is lema tevet yufta did Reb Yosef. In that case, does that mean that our Mishnah would be a contradiction on Reb Yosef? The Itmar, because we have a discussion, which we learned in Baba Kama, Shomer Aveda, when a person is watching an Aveda. So anytime you found something, you have to watch it until the owner comes. What kind of Shomer are you? Rabba Omaka Shomer Chinam, Rabbi Yosef Omaka Shomer Sacher. So Rabba says the din of a Shomer Aveda is like a Shomer Chinam, meaning that he's potter for almost anything. He's only chayev only if there was Pshia or Shlichus Yam. Rabbi Yosef says that he's like a Shema Sacher. So therefore he'd be chayev for Gneva Vaveda, he'd be potter for Einsin. The reason we learned in Baba Kama, a couple of reasons why Rabbi Yosef would consider him a Shema Sacher. We have the concept there called Pruta de Rabbi Yosef, which is that when he's taking care of the Aveda at that time, he's potter from various other mitzvahs. If, for example, while he's taking care of the Aveda, a poor person were to come to the door and ask for tzedakah, he would be potter from giving the person tzedakah, because he's osik mitzvah and he's potter min mitzvah. Tosfos both there and here point out, it doesn't mean the whole time the Aveda is by him. You don't say he's osik mitzvah as long as the Aveda is by him. Otherwise, for example, every time a person is wearing tefillin, a person is wearing tzitzis the whole day, he'd be considered osik mitzvah and he'd be potter min mitzvah. Obviously not. So it means that it means only when he's actually actively occupied with the mitzvah. Anyway, that's one reason. The other reason the Gemara says over there in Bava Kama is because Hashem imposed on him the responsibility to guard it. That itself makes him a Shema Sacher, which one way of explaining that means, in other words, because now he's getting a Schar Mitzvah for it. Anyway, the point is, according to Rabbi Yosef, he's a Shema Sacher regardless. So, and there we're talking about a Shomer Aveda. You're not necessarily like in the Mishnah over here, where you're we're not talking about necessarily where you're selling the animal and holding on to the money. We're talking about all cases of Aveda. Even let's say now, what happens if you found an Aveda of money itself? What happens if you didn't find an animal and then sold it? You found to begin with a purse full of money and you're holding on to it. You certainly don't have the right to use that money meanwhile. And yet, Rabbi Yosef considers you a shomer sacher, whereas from our Mishnah, the implication seems to be only when you have permission to use the money, only then are you shomer sacher, like Rabbi Taifun says. So in that case, then our Mishnah would seem to be a contradiction against Rabbi Yosef. So the Gemara answers Amalach Rabbi and. So Rabbi Yosef is going to answer, you know, when it comes to Gneva Aveda, even Rabbi Akiva is going to agree that he's Chayim, because he is a Shomer Sachar just by virtue of being a Shomer Aveda, irrespective of whether he's able to use the money or not. Even Rabbi Akiva, who's saying you can't use the money, Rabbi Yosef would still say that you're a Shomer Chinam. He pligi ba oinsin de shoyel. The machlokas is, as far as a shoyel, after all, is chayiv and oinsin as well. So the machlokas, Reb Taifun and Rabbi Akiva, is whether this person is chayiv and oinsin as well. Reb Taifun sava, shorel le rabbonon le shtemushi begavayu. Reb Taifun takes the view that the chachamim do allow the shomer to use the money in this kind of case, where he sold the animal and is holding on to the money. Vahavale shoyel alayu. Therefore, he becomes a shoyel on the money. Strictly speaking, Tosfos says, really, where it's not really a shoyel. Technically, in Lashon Kodesh, you have a difference in terminology between whether you're borrowing something that you're going to return the exact same thing versus when you're borrowing something that you're not going to return the exact same thing. So there's a difference. For example, in English, we say "lend me your car" or "lend me $100." You use the same word "lend" for both of them. In Lashon Kodesh, technically, the car would be she'ela, and the one who's borrowing it is a shoyel. Money would be halva, and the one who borrows is the loiva. So Tosfos points out, right, strictly speaking, we mean over here, Reb Taifun considers him a loiva, but because we're talking about the dinim of a shomer, and among the dalad shomim, you have the type called shoyel, who's chayiv and oinsin, therefore he's using the expression shoyel, even though properly speaking it would be loiva, because obviously you're not returning the exact same coins that you sold the animal for. So therefore, said Reb Taifun is saying, not only are you chayiv and gneiv of aveda, that you'd be chayiv for, says Reb Yosef, anyway, because you, to begin with, you're a shomer sacher. But now, by virtue of the fact that you're allowed to use the money, then that makes you not only a shomer sacher, but a shoyel, and therefore you're chayiv even ba'onsin. Rabbi Akiva holds that no, the Chacham do not allow you to use the money. So therefore, the Hilchah Lehavi Shoyel Alayu. So you're not a shoyel on the money. However, Rabbi Yosef is going to say you are a shomer sacher on it. Tosfos, by the way, much of the long Tosfos over here discusses the point: who is the halacha like? You have on the one hand, you have other Gemaras that seem to imply that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef. And therefore, Rabbi Hananel and Halachas Gdolos say that the halacha is indeed like Rabbi Yosef. On the other hand, Tosfos goes and says that those Gemaras are not necessarily a proof for it, and it goes through a long discussion on the ins and outs of that. One thing Tosfos points out, there is a general rule that the Gemara mentions in Bava Basra that the halacha is usually like Rabba over Rabbi Yosef, except for three things, and this is not one of them. So therefore, that should show that the halacha is like Rabba, that a Shomer Aveda is a Shomer Chinam. On the other hand, the fact is, many other Rishonim disagree with that and say the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, and they would have different proofs for that. And in the end, in Shulchan Aruch, that's how it's paskin, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, that a Shomer Aveda is indeed a Shomer Sacher, meaning that he's chayev for Gneva Aved. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, so now, what are you telling me then? So let's review then. In the Mishnah, Reb Taifun is saying you're allowed to use the money, and therefore you're chayev bachur yosan. Reb Akiva is saying you're not allowed to use the money, therefore you're not chayev bachur yosan. Now, Now Rabbi Yosef is saying it doesn't mean what you think it means, that it means that he can use the money and therefore he's a shema sachar versus he can't use the money and he's a shema chinam. But rather, in both cases, it'd be at least a shema sachar, and if he's allowed to use the money, then he actually becomes a shoyol. The question is, lefichach de Rabbi Akiva lomali. In that case, why is Rabbi Akiva using the word lefichach? What is the he's saying that. If according to him you can't use the money, then obviously you're not going to be chayav ba'on sin. If you say, like we assumed originally, that Rabbi Akiva is saying that that you can't use the money and therefore you're not a shema sachar, okay, then we understand. In other words, like this, the Mishnah would be implying, not like Rabbi Yosef, you're not a shema sachar ordinarily, only if you can use the money. And here, since you can't use the money, then you're not a shema sachar and you're potter. But if according to Rabbi Yosef, you're a shema sachar regardless, and the only question is whether you're becoming a shoyal, obviously you're not a shoyal unless you can actually use it. So therefore, why would Rabbi Akiva even have to say laficha? Once he says, lo yishtamash behen, automatically we would understand he's not a shoyal. And once he's not a shoyl, then you would know he's potter from Einsin. So why does Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Yosef's understanding, why does Rabbi Akiva have to use the word leficha? And the Gemara teaches out the question. If you're going to tell us that they're arguing whether the shomer is chayav for gnev of aveda, therefore that explains. Rabbi Akiva is saying, you're not allowed to use the money. And therefore, if they're lost, then he's not chayav b'achru yosan. And we understand what the chiddush of that is. Because without that, without Rabbi Akiva telling us that, you would think that nevertheless he's a shema sachar in all cases, and he's always chayiv or gnev v'aveda mechayiv, and he's always going to be chayiv in gnev v'aveda because of one or the other reasons of why Rabbi Yosef considers him a shema sachar, pruta de Rabbi Yosef, or the reward that he's going to get from Hashem for doing it, or whatever. So therefore, then we understand why Rabbi Akiva has to stress l'ficha, that nevertheless, no, it's not so. He's actually a shema chinam unless he's able to use the money. But since he's not able to use the money, then he remains a shema chinam. So we understand the chiddush of what, and he continues, kamash malam lefichach. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva tells us the lefichach, meaning hash to de'amit lo yishtamash behen. Once you're saying that he's not allowed to use the money, shema socha lo yhavi, then he's not a shema socha, he remains a shema chinam, and pruta to Rabbi Yosef or any of the other reasons of Rabbi Yosef, we don't care about, what Rabbi Akiva would be saying implicitly, and therefore, v'lem chayiv, b'gnev v'aveda, and therefore he's not chayiv if it gets lost or if it gets stolen or lost. Eli yamit b'gnev v'aveda to kol amale pligi d'chayiv, but you're telling me, Rabbi Yosef, that both Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva agree that he's definitely a shema chinam, and he's definitely chayiv b'gnev v'aveda. Well, in that case, ki pligi ba'onsin de shoyl, and all they're arguing about is whether he's chayev like a shoyl in onsin. Well, my lefichach de Rabbi Akiva. Then why does Rabbi Akiva have to say the lefichach? Obviously, if you can't use the money, then you're not a shoyl on it, because by definition, you can't be a shoyl unless you're allowed to use the thing that you borrowed. So hachem yibayil the mishnah. So all the mishnah should have had to say is Rabbi Akiva im lo yishtamish behen. Rabbi Akiva is saying you can't use him. Va'ano yadina, and automatically I would know to kivin de lo yishtamish behen lav shoyl havi ve'in achay bachu yosan. And I would automatically know that if he can't use them, then he's not a shoyl or a loiva, whatever, and therefore he's not chay bachu yosan. So the question comes down to lefichach de Rabbi Akiva lomali. So why does Rabbi Akiva need to say his lefichach? Why does he need to spell out that corollary that therefore he's not chayav b'achru yosan, which Rabbi Yosef is taking to mean that he's not chayav b'onsin? Of course, what would he have to make him chayav b'onsin if he's not allowed to use the money? And the Gemara says, you're right. Mishum lefichach de Rabbi Tarfon. You're right, Rabbi Akiva does not really need to say his lefichach. He's only saying it in order to be parallel with Rabbi Tarfon. Well, lefichach de Rabbi Tarfon lamali. Well, in turn, Rabbi Tarfon, why does he need to say his lefichach? Again, obviously, if you can use the money, then you are shoyl, and therefore that you'd be chayev. Again, if you say like Rabbah, then it's more straightforward. Again, the point is, Rabbi Tarfon wants to tell us you're not a shema chinam unless you're not a shema sachar even unless you're able to use the money. So therefore, in other words, not like Rabbi Yosef. But if you're telling me according to Rabbi Yosef, And then Tosfos says also you could also take Rabbi Tarfon's lefichach just say to be medayik from it that only because you're allowed to use it are you chayiv. But other than that, if you're not allowed to use it, then you potter. Again, not like Rav Yosef. But according to Rav Yosef, why would Rav Tirfen have to say it's lefichach anyway? And Tosfos goes on to discuss that nevertheless, maybe the chiddush is that the fact that he's able to use it doesn't make him a shoyel; it makes him only a shomer sachar. So Tosfos discusses that a little bit and says that okay, it's not really the Gemara is not really asking a question on Reb Tirfen; it's just trying to explain what does Reb Tirfen want to tell us with his laficha. Okay, so the answer is hachi kamer. We can say what Reb Tirfen means is as follows. Given the shorle rabbanon leishtamush begavayu, once the Chachamim gave him permission to use the money, kimandi shtamush begavayu dami. It's the equivalent of as though he already used it. We shouldn't say, in other words, if afterwards there was Gneva Vaveda, not Gneva Vaveda, we said according to Reb Yosef Yiskayiv, either way from Gneva Vaveda, if there was an onus, he can't say, well, the fact is I didn't use the money yet. Mela, if I'd used the money, I agree I should be chayev for insin, but I didn't even use it yet. Why should I be chayev for insin? So Reb Tirfen is telling us that no, once the Chachamim give him permission to use it, then it's considered as though he used it, and therefore he's chayev achriyosan, and he's chayev even for insin. In other words, the same way as, for example, a person borrows something, even if he had a regular thing, even if he hadn't started using it yet, he's already chayev achriyosan once it came into his rishus. And the same, unless they made a deal otherwise between them, of course. And the same way, for example, you borrow money, even if you didn't spend it yet, you're still chayav b'achriyosin regardless. So it would be over here, says Reb Tirfen. So that's Reb Tirfen's l'fichach. You shouldn't think, yes, the Chacham gave you permission to use the money, but until you actually use it, you're not a shoyl. No, Reb Tirfen is saying, according to Reb Yosef, that even before you use it, you're already a shoyl by virtue of the fact that you could use it. Okay. So therefore, the Mishnah is not a contradiction on Rabbi Yosef, and we can say that both Reb Tirfen and Rabbi Akiva do agree that he is a Shomer Socher as a baseline, and the question is whether he becomes a Shoyl. Rabbi Akiva, in fact, did not have to spell that point out, but once Reb Tirfen is explaining his point with a Lefichach, and that we need to know in order to tell us the Chiddush, that even before he uses the money, he's already Chayim, then Rabbi Akiva uses his Lefichach as well, even though according to Rabbi Yosef, it wasn't really necessary. Okay. So now the basis of what Reb Yosef has been explaining is that both Reb Tirfen and Rabbi Akiva are agreeing that he's chayev that he's chayev as far as gneiva v'aveda, and the only machlokas is as far as oinsin. The question is v'ha'avdu katani. The question is on the wording of the Mishnah. The Mishnah uses the expression in Reb Tirfen l'fichachim avdu chayev b'achriyosan, and Reb Tirfen l'fichachim avdu ena chayev b'achriyosan. Avdu generally means aveda, which is one of the things that an aveda where it's something that he could have prevented. It's not an ones, and a shomer chinam is potter for it, and a shomer sachar and a shoyel achayim. So what are you telling me, Rabbi Yosef, that they're arguing only as far as ones? The word avdu doesn't suggest an ones. And the answer is kidderaba, the same way as we find Rabba explaining the word avdu in a different context. Later on in the Masechta, it brings from a Mishnah in Masechta Shkolim that describes a case where people of a certain city have collected their Machzah Shekel in Yonah D'Yoma, because now it was Adar when they were collecting the Shkolim. So the people of a certain city collected their Machzah Shekel, and they designated they appointed somebody to go and bring their collection of Machzah Shekel to Yerushalayim, and something happens to it on the way. So the Mishnah describes over there that you can have cases where they were Ovdu or Nignavu, where they were lost or they were stolen. And then you have dinim about whether they have to give new machzah shekel, and who has to swear that, the shliach has to swear, but does he swear to the people of the city that, in other words, is he considered at this point still that the money is considered their responsibility, and therefore he has to swear to them like any shomer, or would it be that he swears to the gizborim of the Beis Mikdash? We're going to discuss that whole point later on in the Masechta in the fourth parak. Anyway, the point is that Rabba explains over there, Da'amar Rabba, Nignavu, the word Nignavu in that Mishnah doesn't necessarily mean that it was stolen by regular Ganovim, where Shema Socha would be chayiv for that anyway. We're talking about Ballistim Mizuyan. We're talking about Rabba explains over there that we're not talking about that you have the person who's carrying the Matzah Shekel is doing it for free. We're talking about you paid him, which means that you, which means, so now once you paid him, the people of the city have done whatever they could. They weren't careless. If they sent it with a Shema Chinam, you could argue it was careless, because what are you sending it with somebody who doesn't even have very much responsibility for it? But you're sending it with a Shema Socher who has a higher degree of responsibility. Listen, there's nothing more you could do. So therefore, and therefore you have dinim about when they're potter from paying again. And Rabbi explains that Nignavu in that Mishnah means Ballistim Mizuyan. It means not that it was stolen from them, like somebody sneaked in during the night and then stole the money box, but rather it means that they were held up by a Listim Mizuyan, by an armed robber, which is an oinus. Similarly, when the Mishnah says they're ovdu, doesn't mean that they were lost, as in, for example, that they don't remember where they put the money or whatever. It means shetava sfinasa bayam, means that it was being brought on a ship and the ship sank, which is an oinus. So we see, in other words, that the word ovdu, that the word ovdu can sometimes mean an oinus, and that's what, according to Rabbi Yosef, that's what it means in our Mishnah over here. Both Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva would agree that he's chayev for things that are not an oinus, gneva v'aveda, because he's a shema sacher, but they're only arguing whether he's chayev for oinus, and Rabbi Tarfon is saying him ovdu, if they were lost, meaning by an oinus, for example, the ship sinking, then ain't a chayev b'achriyosan, and Rabbi Akiva says he'd still be chayev b'achriyosan, because as we just worked out, Rabbi Akiva would consider him a shoyol, and Rabbi Tarfon does not. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, halacha ke Rabbi Tarfon. The halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon, that he does have a higher degree of chiyuv, depending, as Tosfos discussed in Amud Aleph, whether the halacha ends up being in the machlokas Rabba or Rabbi Yosef, whether the halacha ends up being like Rabba or like Rabbi Yosef, is going to make a difference what we mean the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon. If the halacha ends up being like Rabbi Yosef, as most Rishonim say, and as is brought in Shulchan Aruch, then it would mean Rabbi Tarfon would say that he's chayiv for gneiv v'aveda, but potter for, but or, that he's chayiv for everything, gneiv v'aveda and oinsin, like a shoyl. And if we say the halacha is like Rabba, as Tosfos was saying, then it would mean Rabbi Tarfon would say that he's considered like a shema socher, and then we'd say he's considered like a shema socher and he's chayiv for gneiv v'aveda, but potter from oinsin. Okay. So the Gemara tells a case that's going to relate to this. The Gemara tells biyad Rachva havelehanu zuzah diyasmi. Rachva, one of the Amoraim, had in his possession, was taken care of money that belonged to Yesoimim. So there was money that belonged to Yesoimim that was deposited by him for safekeeping. Either the Yesoimim's father, before he passed away, had entrusted it to him, or the Yesoimim had an apotropos who, for whatever reason, is not able to hold on to the money himself, and therefore he deposited it by Rachva. You could even have actually where Rachva himself is the apotropos who's taking care of the Yesoimim. Whatever the case, so he had this money being deposited by him. Agoris Abach, by the way, takes the word not biyad Rachva, which means in the hand, but rather bei Rachva. Meaning in the household of Rachva, meaning the same idea. In other words, it was deposited for safekeeping in his household. And the question would be, Agoris Habach changes throughout the next few lines. He changes all the singulars to plurals, because according to him, the question was, the family as a whole came to ask a shayla whether they were allowed to use the money. So also, Kameh de Rabbi Yosef, so Rachva, or his family, came to Rabbi Yosef, Omale, and he asks, Ma'olish to Moshe B'Gavayu, would I be allowed to use that money? And then set aside write an IOU that eventually I'm going to reimburse the Yesoimim that amount of money. Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef says, yeah, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel halacha k'Rabbi Tarfon. Yeah, we see that the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon as in our Mishnah, as we just said. So yes, the same way as by a Shomer Aveda, you're able to use the money according to Rabbi Tarfon, and you are chayv b'achriyosan. So yeah, you're also in the same situation, Rachva, and therefore you can go ahead and do that. Omalei Abaye, but Abaye says to Rabbi Yosef, v'lav itmar Allah, wasn't there said about that there's a little more detail in that that you're not taking into consideration. All of that would only apply when you're talking about money of Aveda. So in other words, the money for which an Aveda was sold. So like we said in the Mishnah, you found an animal, and after a certain amount of time, you sold the animal, and you're holding on to the money. The fact is that meanwhile, the fact is you had tircha of taking care of the animal to begin with, whether it was 3 days or a month or 3 months or however long it was for the different types of animals. As we worked out before, you did have a certain amount of time when you were putting in tircha into taking care of the animal, and therefore you should be entitled to use the therefore you should be entitled to use the money. And Reb Taufan is telling you that you are. And we're saying the halacha is like Reb Taufan. Avol mois aveda, but when you're talking about actual money of the money itself that was lost and found, and now of course money many times does not have a simon, but Rashi points out we have cases earlier in our perek where there is. You found them inside a money bag and you're waiting for the owner to come and give a simon on the money bag, or you find three coins or more stacked in a tower like shape, like we learned on Daf Chof Hey. That you have to return those, etc. So yeah, there are cases we have Moris Aveda themselves that you're holding on to. Deloitte Tarachbu, you didn't put any tirche into those, then that's different. Loy, then no, you don't have the same dinim. Vahani Kamois Aveda Damu. Now Abaya points out to Rabbi Yosef, isn't this money of Yisraelim like Moris Aveda? Rachva didn't put in effort into this money. It's almost like it landed in his lap. Even if you say that he's the apotropos of the Yisraimim, fine. The fact is, he's doing other things for the Yisraimim, but not with this money. Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef says to Rachva Zil, go. In other words, I can't help you. They're not allowing me to be matirat to you. You're right. I think that you should be able to, but the fact is, Abaya is pointing out that you can't. Abaya was Rav Yosef's Talmud, but nevertheless, he does have a point that because of that, you shouldn't be allowed to use it. Mepharshim points out an interesting thing, by the way. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that when a person has come to a din Torah, a dayan is not allowed to tell him afterwards, you know what, I would have passed it in your favor, but the other guy is outvoted. So how was Rav Yosef able to say that to Rachva? And the answer is they were all in the Beis Medrash together. Rachva didn't just come to the Beis Din Shtibol. He came to the Beis Medrash. He was a Talmud Chacham himself. And he heard this whole discussion go on, so he knows perfectly well that Abaya had raised this objection, and it's because of that that Rabbi Yosef is telling him that he can't use it. So there's no holach rochel megalasod. There's no revealing a secret over there. Rabbi Yosef is not revealing any secret that he shouldn't, because Rachva was there the whole time and then knows exactly what happened. Okay, Mishnah says. Now, what about if you find, so now the previous Mishnah talked about animals, where you have to feed them and do other things to take care of them. Now we're going to talk about things where you don't have to feed them, they're inanimate objects, but you have to do other things with them in order to keep them from getting damaged. So the Mishnah says, Matzah Svarim. If you found Svarim, and that can mean Sifrei Torah, it can mean other kinds of Svarim, Rashi points out that all Svarim in those days were made as scrolls. The whole concept of books like we have them with separate pages only came in a few hundred years later. They actually even found, for example, they found in the Cairo Gniza, they found a fragment of a Gemara that was written like a Sefer Torah, that was written literally like a scroll. The Rambam also describes in one place in Yad HaChazaka, the Rambam describes when he's dealing with a certain halacha where there are different gersois in the Gemara about it. He mentions, he says, I found a 500-year-old Gemara written on a scroll, written in a Sefer Torah style that has the gersa such and such. So yeah, it seems that up until the middle of the time of the Gaonim, even once they started writing the Mishnah and the Gemara and other Sfarim, it seems that originally Jews wrote their Sfarim in scroll form, and eventually only later did they start adopting the form of a codex and later on of a book as we have them nowadays. Anyway, so you find Sfarim. You're allowed to read from them once every 30 days, because every 30 days you have to open up the scroll and roll it in order to air it out, in order that it doesn't get moldy. So while you're doing that, then you're allowed to read. If the person who found it doesn't know how to read, then he just rolls it in order to air them out. But you're not allowed to learn from them to begin with. You're not allowed to learn something new, because when you're learning something new, you're going to be keeping it open for a long time, and then it may wear out. And you're not allowed to have somebody else read from the sefer together with you, because then each one is going to be pulling it in their direction to see it more closely, and then it may rip. Continues the Mishnah, Motzak Sus, if you find clothing, Minara Echad L'Shloshim Yom, then you have to shake it out once every 30 days, because again, otherwise it'll get moldy. V'shoit Cholot Sarka, and you can also, you have to spread it out, you shake it out, and then you spread it out to air, L'Tzarka, where it's needed for it, to prevent it from getting moldy or to get or getting eaten by moths or whatever. But not spread it out for his own cupboard. For example, let's say it's a nice quilt or something like that, and you'd want to hang it on your wall as a decoration. You can't do that. And we'll learn about the details of that in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. The Mishnah continues. Klei kesef uklei nechoshes. If you find silver, and by the way, when the Mishnah had said, as far as the Sforim, when it says yilmud behem lachatchila, v'lo yikra acher imay, are limud and kriya the same thing? The smeh holds that actually they are the same thing. So you're not allowed to use the sefer at all to learn something new. On the other hand, the Rashash argues that maybe not, and says that kriya would be without delving into it, limud would be be'iyun. So lo yilmud behem lachatchila, v'lo yikra acher imay. In other words, the Mishnah is saying, as far as learning, where you're going to be doing in depth, that you can't learn a new topic, because again, you're going to be keeping the sefer open for a long time, and it may get damaged. As opposed to lo yikra acher imay, as far as reading, even casual reading, that you can't do even with somebody else, because they might end up with. So matzak sus. So if you find clothing, minara echad l'shloshim yom, then you shake it out once every 30 days, v'shoit cholot sarka, and you spread it out where it's needed for it to keep it from getting eaten by moths or whatever. Avaloy l'chvoidoy, but not for his own cupboard where he's doing it to decorate his house. Next, klei kesef or klei nechoshes. If you find silver or copper kalim. Now, normally, you have to keep those buried in the ground. We're going to learn in the next perek that with valuable items, you have to normally keep them buried in the ground. That's considered to be the only safe way to prevent thieves from getting at them. So here, the problem is, if you keep silver or copper kalem in the ground for a long time, then they're going to rust. So therefore, mishtamish behen echad l'shloshim yom. So you use them once every. Mishtamish behen l'tzorkon. You use them when it's necessary for them to keep them from getting to keep them from rusting or tarnishing or whatever. Avalor l'shachkon, but not to use them so much that you're going to wear them out. That some of the keli is going to get rubbed away. You can't use them in that kind of way. So Rashi is explaining that this din is applying to both silver and copper kalim, the same thing, both of them you need to keep in the ground. The Prisha, actually, on tour, learns a little differently. He says there's a difference between silver and copper in that regard. Yes, you have to bury them in the ground, like Rashi is saying, but it's not only that. Even if you have a situation where, for whatever reason, you don't have to bury them in the ground, like nowadays, you wouldn't necessarily have to. You have other ways of holding on to them. Nevertheless, copper is going to rust, even if it's not in the ground, and therefore you have to use it every so often. Silver, you can say, if you put it someplace away safely, then you don't have to use it. In any case, the Mishnah is saying when you do have to use them, you can use them to keep them from getting rusty or whatever, but not when you're using them so hard or for so long that they're going to get rubbed out. Next, klei zahav or klei zchokis. If you find gold or glass kalim, now those are not going to rust or tarnish. And glass, in addition, Rashi points out, you might break. Therefore, la yiga behenach yoga Eliyahu, so you can't touch them until Eliyahu comes, meaning you put them away someplace safe and you leave them there like that indefinitely. And eventually, when the owner comes, you'll unbury them from the ground and give them to him. Meanwhile, you have them in a place which is safe, and there's nothing that they're not going to get ruined by remaining in the ground. And fakir, so if you use them, you have a chance that you might break them, as well in the case of the glass. Next. And the Mishnah continues, Motza sack oikopa. Suppose you found a sack or a kupa, which is a large basket, b'chol davar she'ein davka little, or anything which you yourself wouldn't normally carry, because beneath your dignity, hareza lo yito, then you're not obligated to take it, because, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, we'll learn tomorrow, b'ezras Hashem, you're only obligated to pick up an aveda and return it only when it's lafi kvoido, only when it's within your dignity. If it's something that you yourself wouldn't normally be seen carrying, then you're not obligated to deal with it for somebody else either, as we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow, b'ezras Hashem. So the Gemara starts off, Amar Shmuel, hamotze tefillin b'shuk. If a person finds tefillin in the street, shamed mein manichan la'alter, then right away, he doesn't have to keep them for any amount of time, he can right away evaluate how much they're worth and sell them to somebody else who needs tefillin and manichan and put the money aside. The Ritva actually brings two explanations. His second explanation, which he prefers, is what we just said, that it means you set aside the money. The first explanation, he says, similar to the way we had before with the animals, where conceivably, when we said shamed mehen, might mean that he's allowed to sell the animals to himself. He's allowed to figure out how much they're worth and set aside that amount of money and start using the animal. Over here, it can also mean conceivably that he's allowed to figure out how much the tefillin are worth, set aside that money, earmark for the person to give him when he comes, and then start wearing the tefillin himself. But the other explanation, again, is not to wear the tefillin himself, but just to set aside the money after he sells them. So the Gemara says, Masiv Ravina. So Ravina says, what about it says in our Mishnah? Matzah Sfarim, Kodeh Behen Echol L'Shloshim Yom. We said if you find Sifrei Torah or other Sfarim, then you have to read them, then you can read in them once every 30 days. So you have to keep them for a long time and roll them every 30 days. Vim any yedei liquus goylon. And if you don't know how to read, then you roll them. So you can't just sell them and keep the money. Why by tefillin? Should it be any different? Goylon ein shamed mein manichan loy. We're saying you have to actually keep the safer and roll it and take care of it. Why don't you just say, why, if you're saying with tefillin, you could just sell them. Why not with a safer? The answer is Amar Abaye, tefillin bei barchovu mashka shchichi. The difference is tefillin can very easily be gotten at the house of Bar Chovu. So that was the local sofer in that time, was the household of Bar Chovu. That was the local sofer's shop in those days, and therefore tefillin, it's very easy to get over there. So there's no problem if you found a pair of tefillin and you're going to sell them and set aside the money, no problem. When the owner comes, it'll be easy enough for him to go to Bei Bar Chovu and get another pair of tefillin. Sfarim, lo shchichi, as opposed to sfarim, are less common. So therefore, what good is it going to do him? You're going to give him the money, but it's not going to be so easy for him to get a new safer. So therefore, you have to hold on to the safer for as long as possible. There are other nuances in this as well. The Rambam uses an expression that tefillin are made only for their mitzvah, meaning, in other words, there's nothing else you can do with tefillin other than using them for their mitzvah, and therefore, Poskim talk about what exactly the implication is of the Rambam saying that. Does that mean, therefore, he's saying that the person doesn't mind one pair of tefillin is pretty much like another, and therefore he doesn't mind buying a new pair of tefillin and using that instead? Or does it mean that because they're meant to use for a mitzvah, therefore he would prefer as soon as possible that they're used for a mitzvah rather than just sitting there unused? An interesting Kabbalah dicka thing in this. It's brought in Sifrei Kabbalah. The name Chovu is Rosh HaTevis Chochma Bina Vodat. Because tefillin represent, the Zohar talks about the tefillin represent, the tefillin are worn, tefillin shorosh in particular, are worn on the head in front of the brain, and they represent chochma bina and the two parts of das. The Zohar mentions this in the Alter Rebbe and the Sidurim. Dach has a couple of long maimorim and then biurim on the subject. So you have therefore that so tefillin represent that the four compartments of tefillin represent chochma bina and the two parts of das, which Das itself breaks down into Chesed and Gvura, or becomes the source for Chesed and Gvura, and therefore over here the name of the sofer was Chovu, representing that, standing for Chochma Bina Vodas. So the Gemara says Tananabon. We learn in a Braisa. Hashoyos. Let's talk about now. Here in the Mishnah, we talk about when you found a Sefer Torah. What about if you borrow a Sefer Torah from somebody else? Hashoyos Sefer Torah Machaveri. Hareza lo yashilenu la'acher. You're not allowed to re-lend out the Sefer Torah to somebody else. Post Chibakode, you can open up the Sefer Torah and read from it, which the Gemara is going to ask soon, what's the Chiddush in that, of course, what else did you borrow it for? So we'll get through, we're going to go through this Braisa line by line after we quote the whole thing. Anyway, so you open it and you read it. But again, you can't learn a new topic in it for the same reason as in the Mishnah, because then you're going to keep it open in the same place for a long time. You have to realize, by the way, nowadays we think of Sifrei Torah as only something that you learn from in shul, but back then they actually learned from the Sifrei Torah, because most of Torah Shebaal Peh hadn't been written yet, so they would actually learn from the written Sifrei Torah, and then they would discuss all of the things of Torah Shebaal Peh by heart. So you can't learn from it batchila. Well, a yikra achar ima, and again, you can't have somebody reading with you for the same reason, because each one is going to be pulling it in his direction, and it might rip. V'chein ha-maskid sefer Torah etzach haveiro. Similarly, if a person puts a sefer Torah for safekeeping as a deposit by somebody else, gudla kol shnei masal chodesh, he has to roll it once every 12 months, post chivakodeh boy, and when he's opening it, he can read from it. V'im b'shvila psochai also, but if he's opening it to begin with for his own purpose, then that would be also, because here he's a shomer, and as a shomer chinam or shomer socher, he has no business using the item. So if while he's opening it to roll it and air it out, he happens to glance at something and learn from it, then fine, but otherwise he would be shaleach yad b'pikadon. Otherwise he'd be misusing a pikadon. Sumcha says it's not necessarily 12 months, but if it's a new Sefer Torah, then you should open it up and roll it once every 30 days. If it's an old Sefer Torah, then you should do it once every 12 months. Because with a new Sefer Torah, Rashi points out, a new Sefer Torah is more likely to become moldy than an old one. So therefore, you have to roll it more. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, and Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says either one, new or old, it's always 12 months. Which means, in other words, that our Mishnah had said Achas l'shloshim yom, so the Gemara is going to analyze that now when it goes through the Braisa and see what the detail is with that. So the Gemara says, we're saying if you borrow a Sefer Torah from somebody else, you're not allowed to lend it out to somebody else. The question is, my area Sefer Torah. Why mention specifically a Sefer Torah? I feel a kol milinami. Wouldn't that apply to anything else? Anything you borrow, you're not allowed to lend out to somebody else. Do Amr of Shimon Lakish kan shana Rebbe. In fact, Rish Lakish says, in connection with a Mishnah in Gittin, we had learned in Masechta Gittin that you have a case where a person sends a get with a shliach, and he tells him, while you're going and delivering the get to my wife, go pick up this item from her. So then you're not allowed to delegate. Ordinarily, the shliach would be able to delegate the giving of the delivery of the get to another shliach. Shliach ois a shliach, as it's called. But here, where he tells him to pick up to pick up something from her, then he's not allowed to. And in this connection, Rebbe taught in implicitly in that Mishnah what it says in a Braisa, that when you borrow something, you're not allowed to lend it out to somebody else without permission. And when you rent something, you're not allowed to rent it out to somebody else without permission. So then the same thing is true of everything. Why does our Braisa mention only a Sefer Torah? And the answer is, that's just it. Sefer Torah, it's Tzrichalei. The Chiddush is as far as a Sefer Torah. You would think maybe the person would appreciate that a mitzvah is being done with his possession. Therefore, the Braisa is telling us not so, and you can't lend it out. Now, we do many times have the concept that a person does want a mitzvah to be done with his mamon. For example, we say you're allowed to borrow somebody else's talus or somebody else's tefillin because the person would appreciate a mitzvah being done with it. So one distinction, the Ritva makes a distinction, because with Sfarim, where they can easily get ripped or otherwise wound, then the owner is more concerned about that. And because after all, you're gaining that you're able to learn from it. On the other hand, I may end up losing out that I don't have a sefer anymore because it rips, and then I won't be able to learn in the future. So therefore, there's that. The Shach also makes a point that even when it comes to a talus or tefillin, it doesn't mean on an ongoing basis you can be borrowing somebody's talus or tefillin without permission. It means as a one-time thing, as an occasional thing, you could do that. So then, and the same thing over here by Sfarim. Now by Sfarim, therefore, again, you have it by you for a considerable amount of time, so you can't do that. And Sfarim are much more easily wound than a talus or tefillin, then therefore that's why the Braisa is saying you can't use them at all. So if so you can't use them at all. Again, when you're opening up to read them, if something happens to catch your eye, then you're allowed to learn from them. With that said, by the way, okay, so that's that. So you see, you still can't lend it out to somebody else, even though that means a mitzvah will be accomplished with it because the person didn't give you permission. Next, we said in the Braisa, you can open up the Sefer Torah and read from it. Question is Pshita, obviously. What else did he borrow the Sefer Torah for, if not to read from it? The answer is you're right. There's no chiddush in those words of the Braisa. The chiddush is the next part. Abel over Vajla, Yomud Revatchila. But as long as you don't learn in it, Latchila, so that you don't learn in it a new topic, so that the Braisa had to point out that part, like we had in the Mishnah, that you're not allowed to learn a new topic in it, because then you're going to keep it open for a long time. So therefore, the Braisa introduced that by saying you are allowed to read from it when you're borrowing a Sefer Torah. But the point is, even though, of course, you're allowed to read from it, that's what you borrowed it for, you still have restrictions. What? Then the Braisa continued about v'chena mafkid sefer Torah etzel chaveri. When a person deposits a sefer Torah for safekeeping by another person, gedola kol shnei masa chodesh, he has to roll it once every 12 months. Post chavakodei boy, and he opens it and he reads it. Now that sounds like he's allowed to read from it. He's allowed to open it when he wants to read from it. So when asked Maya vita gabe, what is that doing by him? It's a pikadin. He's not allowed to use the pikadin without. He's not allowed to use the pikadin without permission. So the two, and also the Braisa continues, in b'shvilei p'sochei also, that if he opened it for his own needs, then it's also hamet post-chivikotei, but you just said that he's allowed to open it and read in it. So what is it? Is he allowed to open it whenever he wants and read it, or is he not allowed to? The answer is hokkamer, im k'shu goloi post-chivikotei, but if while he's rolling it, he opens it and he reads it, mutter, then that would be allowed. Im b'shvilei p'sochei, but if he opened it for his own purposes to begin with, also, then that would be also because then he's using the pikadin inappropriate. So he's allowed. So when he's opening it up to roll it to prevent it from getting moldy, then if he happens to notice something, then good, he's allowed to learn with it, but not to open it for his own purpose because that would be shaleach yad b'pikadin. There are, by the way, poskim who say that it's different if your mafkid is safer by a tamid chacham. First of all, again, our sfarim are made much differently than theirs. They're less likely to get moldy over time. But second of all, also, they talk about that if you lend a sefer to a Talmud Chacham, if you deposit a sefer for safekeeping by a Talmud Chacham, yes, you should expect that he's going to learn with it, and it's considered as though implicitly you gave him permission for it. In a similar way, as we're going to learn in the next parak, if you mafkid money by a money changer, for example, where he regularly uses coins all the time for his business, then implicitly you're giving him permission to take those coins and use them for his business. So in the same thing over here, if you deposit a sefer for safekeeping by a Talmud Chacham, yes, you should expect that he's going to open and learn from it, and it's considered as though you gave him permission for that. So our Gemara over here will be talking about, again, either where the person is not such a Talmud Chacham and he just might have, occasionally, he might want to learn something, or we're talking about, again, where their Sfarim were actually written beglila, they were written in scroll form, and therefore there was a much greater likelihood of them getting ruined by opening it up when you're not supposed to. Okay, we said in the Braisa, Sumchus Oimer B'chodesh Shloshim Yom of Yoshin Shnei Masach Chodesh. We said Sumchus had said that there's a difference between a new or an old Sefer Torah, or a new and old Sefer, how often you need to roll it, 30 days versus 12 months. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Oimer Echad Zeh V'Echad Zeh Shnei Masach Chodesh. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says either way 12 months. The question is, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Hainu Tanakama. The Tanakama in the Braisa already had said, Kol Shnei Masach Chodesh. So what is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov adding? And the answer is Ela Eimer, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Eimer, Echad Zeh V'Echad Zeh Shloshim Yom. Rather, you have to correct the wording of the Braisa. Both Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, whether it's new or old, you only have to roll it once every 30 days. We have to roll it, not once every 12 months, but once every 30 days. And that's how it is. So Rashi points out then on Mishnah, which said 30 days, follows Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And the halacha is usually like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and so it is over here. We said, but we said you can't learn a new topic in the Sefer Torah, whether you're watching as an Aveda or whether you received it as a Pikodin or borrowed it or whatever. You said you can't learn a new topic in it. And you can't have somebody else read with you because, as we said, each person is going to be pulling it towards him and it might rip. But the Gemara says, I have a contradiction to that. A Braisa says, Lo yukra parasha v'yishne. You're not allowed to read a parasha and learn it again, because again, then again, you're keeping it open for a long time. Lo yukra v'parasha v'yitargim. You're not allowed to read a parasha in it and do the targum for the same reason. You're keeping it open for a long time. Lo yiftach bo yosim shlosha dapin. You can't open it wider than three columns at a time. You can't have three people reading together in it from one volume. So that's the Braisa, Hoshnaim Kurdin, implying that two people together would be able to. Amar Abaya, Loi Kasha, can be in echad, can be shnein yonim. It depends whether you're talking about whether reading from one topic, from one parasha versus two different ones. So Rashi explains. Rashi explains that two people is fine if each of them is reading a different portion, because then each one is reading his own portion. They're not going to pull it one to the other. Each one is reading a different column in the Sefer Torah, for example, so therefore no problem. But if they're reading from one single parasha and each one is going to want to look more closely in it, then they're going to pull it this way or that, and then it's going to tear. The Rambam learns the other way around, that where it's one topic, there's no problem of them each pulling it in their direction. They're both going to be looking closely at it and not pulling it towards them. Whereas with two different inyanim, that Amam learns, that would be a problem for two people to do it, because each one is going to want to pull it to him because each one is reading from a different column. But in that case, that's the distinction. So one way or the other, depending according to Rashi or the Amam, you have that distinction. Sometimes you are allowed to have two people do it, but never three. Okay. We'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, with more analysis of the dinim of our Mishnah.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone.